We now start a whole new Masechta. This is Maseches Shkalim, and although typically I give a separate introduction to give an overview and introduction to the themes of the Masechta, in this case I'm going to just have my introduction to the first Mishnah incorporate what I would say as a basic introduction. So the theme of this Masechta has to do with the administration of the Beis HaMikdash, and specifically the collection and distribution of the money, which we refer to as the shkalim, that is used to purchase the communal offerings, like the Korban Tamid and the Musafin, in the temple. So shkalim referring to these coins, the first two chapters talk about their collection, the second two chapters talk about their distribution, and then we'll go on for the latter four chapters of the Masechta to discuss other administrative issues that pertain to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, that being the case, in truth, one would think that the Masechta really belongs in Seder Kodshim, the order of the Mishnah, which deals with the various aspects of what went on in the Beis HaMikdash. However, it does feature here for whatever reason. Mefarshim explains and suggests that perhaps it's coming here because we'll see that part of the annual cycle, which is emphasized in the very beginning of our Masechta, of what goes on in the month preceding Nisan, the month of Adar, and the collection of these monies, as well as other things that the courts ensure are done in Adar, start here. And that being the case, some suggest that the reason why the Masechta appears right after Pesachim is because it's around that time of year. I'm partial to the explanation that the order of the Masechta is simply goes in order of decreasing number of chapters of Prakim, and since our Masechta has 8 chapters and the preceding Masechtas of Erev and Pesachim at 10, so it comes next, Yoma comes next also with 8, and then we'll go down from there. In any case, so the Masechta really is built on one mitzvah, the mitzvah to, for every Jewish male to give a half of the standard coin of the time, referred to as the Machsa Shekel, although we'll see in the Masechta itself that the large coin they used in the time of the Second Temple was called the Sela, and the Sela was equal to 4 dinar, or Zuz. Dinar and Zuz is the same thing, and half of that is 2 dinar, 2 Zuz, and the coin, which is worth the value of 2 dinar, 2 Zuz, or more relevantly, half of the Sela, is called a Shekel. So although in the time of the Temple, it was a whole shekel in time of the psukim of the in the Mishkan time and in the Chumash, it's referred to as half a shekel because it's referring to weight. Okay, be that as it may, here it's all built on some verses that come in Shmos when they did a census in Parshas Kitisa, and they collected everyone giving half a shekel's weight worth of silver to be counted as part of the census. And from those verses, we understand there's an obligation for Jews to also contribute, every Jew to contribute towards the funds that are used for communal offerings in the temple. So those verses are, like I said, in the beginning of Kitisa. The Pesukim read, V'yadaber Hashem l'Moshe lemor. God spoke to Moshe saying, Kisisa es rosh b'nei Yisrael l'fkudehem, when you're going to count the Jews for a census. V'nasnu ish kofer nafsho Lashem bifkodosam, every Jewish male, and we'll see this mitzvah is going to be only for men ultimately, will give some sort of atonement for his soul by through the counting. Vloyeh bahem negef bifkodosam, and by using the silver as a proxy for instead of counting the heads themselves, that will prevent any sort of like plague amongst the people. Zeyitnu kol ha'over al hapkudim, this is what everyone who's getting counted should give. Machtzis hashekel b'shekel kodesh, they should give half of a shekel's weight of silver, using the shekel kodesh, the holy shekel weight, which is equivalent of esrim geira hashekel. The shekel weighs the same as 20 geira, another unit of weight. Machtzis shekel trumas lashem, and this half shekel will be a gift to God. Now, truma, which means like a contribution or gift, also has the connotation of being elevated or elevation, because like Romamut, Rome means height, or height, elevation. So truma means that it is somehow elevating to make this contribution, if you will. That's what all trumas, every donation is like that. So we'll see that this word truma appears 3 separate times in this passage, okay, and that's going to be very important. So the first time here is it's called a truma l'shem, already seeming a little bit redundant, but the mission, the verses continue on. They say, Kol ha'over al ha'pekudim miben esrim shana v'mala yiten trumas Hashem. Everyone who is going to be counted from 20 years old and up, and that's actually important, according to many, that's very important for our Masechta. Yiten trumas Hashem, they will give this contribution to God, a contribution of God. Again, the word truma appearing for a second time, again, rather superfluously. And third of all, it says, He ashir lo yarbe, the rich person can't add, v'hadal lo yamit, nor may the poor person detract, b'machtz a shekel, from their contribution, which should be exactly half of a shekel's weight of silver. L'ses es trumas Hashem l'chaper al nafsho seichem, to give this trumas Hashem, this contribution of Hashem, again, truma now for the third time, to atone for their souls. It's called an atonement for the souls. Again, you, when you're setting up the Mishkan with this and you're buying the karbonos to do the various offerings, that all's the point of that is to affect atonement, kapara. That's why. V'lakachta es kesef ha-kippur me'eis b'nei Yisrael, and you shall collect this atonement silver from the Jewish people. V'nasato so al avodas oel moed, you'll apply it to the work done in the oel moed, the tent of meeting. And it'll serve as a reminder of the Jewish people before Hashem to atone for their souls. So, we have three times the word truma being used in this passage and referring to giving of half of a shekel's weight of silver. Now, the Chazal understand that there were three separate contributions given that are referred to in this passage, each in the amount of half a shekel's weight of silver. The first contribution was to the actual building, construction of the Mishkan, that portable temple, the tabernacle, and specifically the silver went to make the Adonim, these kind of sockets, which ended up being the foundation and base that kept the structure of the, I'll call them the walls that went around the Mishkan. Second of all, the money was used to actually buy and pay for the various communal offerings, etc., that were used in the service of the Beis HaMikdash. And finally, there's a third truma that is, unlike the first two, voluntary in nature. The first two were obligatory. Everyone had to give. The third is actually voluntary, that people can give to their, the extent of their nedivus lev, their magnanimity. They can opt to contribute to the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, and its functioning. Now, that was those tripart half shekel contribution was done in the time of the verses, in the time of the Mishkan, that one time. But Chazal understand that in these verses is the mandate that every Jew, every year, if he's male and over either bar mitzvah or 20 years old, the machlokas were shown him, but you see, must contribute half a shekel's weight worth of silver or half a coin, of a large coin there, towards the Beis HaMikdash's funds to purchase the communal offerings, which will be used to atone for all the members of Klal Yisrael. And that mitzvah is a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's one of the Taryag mitzvahs, to give this machs a shekel, and it applies during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Nowadays, there's no Beis HaMikdash, unfortunately, and therefore, there's no mitzvah d'oraisa of giving any machs a shekel. So this mitzvah largely doesn't apply, b'zman hazeh. And for that reason, perhaps, there's no Talmud Bavli on this mitzvah, because the typically, the Masechtas that didn't have much application after the Chorban didn't get the treatment of the Talmud Bavli, so that's why there's not much Bavli in terms of all of Seder Kachim and almost all of Seder Taras and Seder Zeroyim. Here, too, while there is a Yerushalmi, there's no Bavli on our Masechta. Nowadays, however, the Rama brings L'Halacha in Or Chaim Simon Tafresh Tzadi Dalid that there is a minhag, this is really based on the Rama, but there's a minhag, that one should give machs a shekel, or even three half shekels, on the eve of Purim in Adar as a remembrance, a zecher of this machs a shekel obligation. And that is certainly the custom, certainly by Ashkenazim. We do give three half shekels, or half dollars, or half pound, whatever your half of the local currency is, and wherever you are, in Eretz Yisrael or abroad, on, let's say, on Tainus Esther, typically, as a remembrance, a reminder of this mitzvah d'oraisa, which will kick in again, as Hashem, with the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, please God, very soon. in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, this would apply to every Jew, even if he lived outside of Eretz Yisrael. And similarly, the custom here that the Ramah brings is going to apply even outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, our mission is going to begin by talking about the reminding people that they had to do this mitzvah in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. Now, this might sound a little strange to you, but you have to understand that in the time of the Second Temple period and the Mishnah period, people did not use money in nearly the same quantity as they use today. Most of what they did was, you know, subsistence farming, etc., or bartering, and money, which was a thing, they did have coins in the time of the Second Temple, and they did use them, but much less frequently than you would imagine. And that being the case, the people needed to be reminded, not just to make their contribution, but actually to make the effort to get the coin they would need to make the contribution that's required of them. And therefore, the Mishnah here begins. It says, Be'echad ba'adar, on the first day of Adar, mashmin ala shkalim v'ala kilayim. They remind everyone, that's the courts, make it known. Mashmiya is to make it heard. Make it known that the obligation to give the shekel and also the kilayim obligation, I'll explain in a moment, is now going to be kicking in. Now, the shkalim reminder, 30 days before, and then the Rosh Chodesh Adar, is because the deadline, if you will, the hard deadline, where it really matters that everyone's given their machzeh shekel, is going to be Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the first day of the month of Nisan. And this is because, actually based on a verse, the verse that talks, it's actually a verse that's talking about the Musaf that's done on the Rosh Chodesh, in the new month, but the verse says, Zos olas chodesh b'chadsho l'chadshei hashana, which is, says this is the burnt offering, the holy burnt offering for the month, in its month, for the months of the year. And the fact that there's a lot of redundancy with the word chodesh there, the rabbis sort of, they made a drush, they understand from there that chodesh b'chadsho tells you that there's a certain month that you need to, that's the word chodesh, that you need to lichadesh, that you need to renew the bringing the supplies, the financial pool from which you will purchase korbonos tzibor, the communal offerings that'll be used from a new collection, a new truma. And the fact that it says lichadshei hashana, they understand that to mean that it's the month of the year that is like the first of the months, meaning Nisan, because the, as the pasuk says, rishon hu lachem lichadshei hashana. So Nisan is the first of the months of the year. So based on that drash, we understand that every year there will be a new collection of shekels that will be pooled together, and from that pool of money will be used to purchase the various korbanos tzibor, the communal offerings. And since the first time that, like, they sort of dip the cup into the treasure chest and pull out a, you know, a big cup of coins that will be used to go purchasing animals, and was done on the first of Nisan, all the money has to be in by then. Typically, when Chazal need to give you notice and warning to put you, get you ready for something, they give you 30 days before, like Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, etc. 30 days is their sufficient amount of notice. And that being the case, 30 days before the first day of Nisan will be the first day of Adar. And that's when they put everyone notice, don't forget to get your shkalim. Now, here it's hishkalim, not machtzis hashekel or chatzi shkalim. The reason why is because, as I said in the introduction a few moments ago, the big coin was the sela, and half of that coin, the half of the big coin, was actually called a shekel. So they're being reminded to get their shkalim, because that's what they need. If you're curious, it's not exactly clear how much the shekel is that we're talking about, but the machzeh shekel weight in the time of the first temple period, and even before in the Mishkan period, was probably somewhere between 4.5 and 7 grams of silver. Back then, hard to know exactly. That's, I'm talking about archaeologically based on what's been found. And so in the time of the Second Temple period, it seems that the sela was the half of a sela was a little larger, somewhere like, say, between 8.5 and maybe 9 or so grams of silver. So at this time, we're talking about something in the ballpark of $5 worth of value, 20 shekels worth of value, whatever, something like that. But I don't know if that's relevant whatsoever in terms of the value today, to equate the value to then. But in terms of silver, we're talking about that amount of silver as a coin. Now, as for the kilayim, they remind them of the kilayim. This is something different, and it's a side point, but because this mission, the next mission, focused on kilayim, we have to discuss it for a second. Kilayim is the prohibition against mixing certain combinations that ought not to be mixed. There are actually five mitzvot in the Torah that prohibit kilayim. One applies to mixing natural fibers of wool and linen together to make garments. It's called shatnez. There's also two that apply to animals. You can't cross-breed different species of animals, like a horse and a donkey to make a mule. You can't force them to mate. And also you can't cross-work, as that's my term, animals, when you can't harness together, let's say, a donkey and a cow to pull a plow or something like that, or even, you know, a dog and a wolf to pull a sled for an Iditarod race. Can't do that. Is it from the Torah? Those are three of them. The other two are relevant to our Mishnah, like those first three. And those are the two that apply to agriculture. One is the prohibition against planting mixed species of grains, or could be or greens or of legumes. That's called kilai zeraim, forbidden mixtures of seeds. And there's also a fifth one called kilai kerem, which lehalacha means planting a forbidden mixture of seeds in a vineyard where you have grapes growing. Okay, so we're referring to those latter two mitzvahs, and the point is that while the mitzvah midorais, the prohibition is not to plant, let's just focus on the we'll call it wheat and barley as an example of mixed seeds, kilai zeraim. So you can't plant wheat and barley together, and if you do, that would be the isra doraisa. But if you didn't plant them together, but just, you know, you planted a wheat field, but there's some barley growing in the field also, because, you know, things happen. There's birds, there's wind, there's, you know, admixtures in your seeds and so on and so forth. So if you have a field that's got wheat and barley growing together, and it looks like you planted them together, they'll be prohibited midurabanan because of maris ayin. It looks like you planted kilayim. Not a doraisa, but a durabanan. And if you've got more than what boils down to 1/24th of your field growing of this admixture, the wrong species, so then the obligation is you have to remove, like pull out those weeds, remove those other species that doesn't belong there, so it doesn't look like you planted kilayim. So in the time of the Mishnah, when did things start to sprout? In the beginning of the springtime. The beginning of Adar is flying around, like, say, the beginning of March time, roughly speaking. And at that point, you can already see what's begun to sprout in your field. And you can see if you have kilayim, if in your wheat field you have barley growing there. And you can identify the barley compared to the wheat. And if so, we're telling you now, get rid of that barley so it doesn't look like you have planted barley and wheat together on purpose. That's what we're referring to over here. The Mishnah continues and says, B'chamisha sarbo, on the 15th of that month of Adar, Korin es ha-Megillah b'krachin. We started by listing all the various administrative things that happened on the 15th of the month of Adar. So we're going to have some things that are totally extraneous, but since they did happen to happen on that day, on the 15th of Adar, we'll mention them. And the first of those is the reading of the Megillah. Normally, we're used to reading Megillah on the 14th of Adar in most places, but cities that were walled in the time of Joshua, Yeshua ben Nun, as well as the city of Shushan Abira, where in Shushan, in the Purim story, they didn't celebrate till the 15th, so like the 15th there, and other walled cities like Jerusalem, we don't read till the 15th. So if the 15th, on the 15th, we read the Megillah in walled cities. Those are the Krachin. Also on the 15th of Adar, Umesaknin es adrachim, they began to fix the roads. Don't forget, you, in an age before proper paving, so over the winter months, the rain comes, the roads get ruined, muddy, and, you know, no longer flat and so on. Therefore, difficult to traverse with your wagon, etc. So you have to refix the roads. And the Eser Rechovos, if you have this gear, I mean, you do, I'm sure, but there were those who didn't. The Bartonura did. They also fixed the Rechovos. The Rechovos here either means the town square, like where they would gather in the city, or like the side streets within the town. And either way, Rechovos are happening inside the city, whereas Drachim are happening between cities. They had to fix those as well to make them now usable and functional now the way rains have stopped. Vesa mikvos hamayim, and same goes for the fixing up of the mikvah. Mikvaos, the mikvah, we're talking here not really drinking water, we're talking here mikvah for tevila, for immersion, for getting pure and entire yourself. So we're talking about A, cleaning out the mikvahs, because throughout the winter, you know, whatever floats does float into the mikvah, and they get green and they get muddy and so on, and rocks, all that stuff has to be removed and cleaned out. So the mikvahs are nice again, now that it stopped raining. And also they have to measure the mikvahs to make sure that the mikvah has the proper amount of water. They need to have a minimum of 40 sa'ah, whatever that is, of water. And if you have rocks falling in and you have evaporation happening, etc., so you have to confirm that this dynamic system of the mikvah has what it needs to be a functional halachic mikvah. Furthermore, on the 15th of Adar, va'os and kol tzarchei harabim, the court did everything that needed to be done on behalf of the people. This refers actually specifically to various court proceedings as the year is coming, so to speak, the fiscal year, if you will, is coming to an end in Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The new first month is coming. They want to make sure that everything has been sorted out. You see that everyone's coming out of their homes and re-emerging into the world at the end of winter, and therefore they have to make sure that the different court proceedings are taken care of, like Dine Mamonos and Dine Nefashos and Erechin and all sorts of other court functions. Umitzainen Esakvaros, they re-indicated where the graves were. That is to say, the graves had to be marked so that people didn't walk over them and become tummy or touch them and become tummy and not know. So you have to mark them off. They typically marked their graves off with plaster, sid, and it's white, like the color of bone. But since over the rain, they could be washed away, covered up, ruined, it has to be remarked, re-cleaned to make sure that people can see exactly where the graves are. And that's a big deal to Chazal. You see how Chazal, we're concerned about Batei Pras, where, like, you know, graves can get lost. In other Mishnahs elsewhere, we're concerned about, you know, the Chazal were made a decree on Eretz Amim, like outside of Eretz Yisrael, that there should be Tamei because they didn't keep track of where the graves were and so on. So this is very important. They remarked the graves. V'yotzin af al kilaim. They even went out regarding the kilaim. That is to say, on the first of Adar, they announced, telling everybody, go check your field, make sure everything's in order. On the 15th, as we'll see in the next Mishnah, they actually sent out agents to go check that people were not growing what looks like kilaim in their fields, and more on what those people would do in the next Mishnah.